feelings. Welcome to Feel Feelings with Danny and George, the show that talks about feelings and the things that make you feel them.
What's your favorite Gatorade? We were talking about this.
I don't think I like any of them enough to really claim it, but I think I would say the blue one.
Wow. Okay.
Like the frost or freeze or whatever they call
glacier
it.
Glacier freeze or something?
Yeah, something. It's not a flavor. It's not cherry.
I was talking to my buddy Nick, who's in town visiting. He's staying at the house, and I'm feeling under the... Hi, I'm Danny, that's George.
Hi.
And this is sick feelings. But I have a friend visiting, and we were talking about Gatorade, and he was like, what's your go-to flavor of Gatorade? And I think it's a normal answer to say yellow. I love yellow. Yellow's the best.
I mean, that's... We're you know, of the age where Gatorade was yellow.
Yeah.
Like, that was it.
It was good.
Yeah, that good. You had red, or you had yellow.
I feel like you had orange, too, because it's named after the Florida Gators, so I feel like they must have made an orange one, right?
I feel like, yes, it did exist, but I don't remember it ever being presented as an option.
Huh.
Like, it was never like, get me an orange one. It was like, just get me a Gatorade, and it was a mystery whether you got red or yellow.
That's true. I'm dying. Yellow Gatorade. It's the way to go for me. I like it. It burns my throat when I'm this sick, but it hurts so good. I'm full of electrolytes, Dan.
Does Gatorade work?
Gatorade work? That's a great question. Like,
I guess it's a question of, like, what is it supposed to do?
I think it works the same way tea works when you're sick, where it's like, you have some tea, you feel a little better. But let's be honest.
Is it just, like, the hydration of it? Because I know that's the trick with tea, is that, like, I mean, it's caffeine, so it is kind of dehydrating, but you are mostly drinking water.
It's mostly water, yeah. It's not like coffee, which is just a straight-up diuretic.
Yeah. Went for a six-mile walk. The only thing I had before it was a big cup of coffee.
Your whole body's bucking.
Yeah, if I'm going to go this far, I got to start taking care of myself.
Oh, man. But yeah, welcome to the sick show, everybody. I'm sick.
Are you sick?
Maybe. Could be
like
a lot of fucking gross
noises. Maybe a little self-inflicted.
Maybe. So we were very busy. We were very busy this whole week, and I got sick while I was away for a work trip to Vegas.
Yeah, you were in Vegas. I think that was on the show last week.
Yeah, and then I came home, and we had people over, and I partied a little too hard, so now I'm hungover and sick.
I like the idea that this is your last memory of the house. I know you're there for a little bit longer, but, you know, a house cooling party, it's like, you know what? This is it. We're done.
Yep.
This is the last thing you'll take with you from this house.
Yep. I have to wash all my sheets because they're covered in sweat.
One of those nights.
But yeah, Vegas was cool.
Tell me about your Vegas trip.
So Vegas, they put us up in a hotel that was so far south off the strip that it was like 20 minutes to anywhere. So I had to like work the whole day and then convince myself that like, no, you have to go do something. Like who knows if you'll have this opportunity again. You're not a gambler, but like find some stuff that can work.
Yeah, there's a different Vegas for every type of person. So, go do whatever that is.
So my two recommendations, I wanted to go to the Punk Rock Museum, but it was closed on Wednesdays, which is an interesting day to be closed.
So punk.
And it's also the very punk rock price of $55 general admission.
Oh, wow.
So
is it run by some boomer punk rocker?
Actually, it's run by Fat Mike.
Yeah. Honestly, that's, not the name I would have said first, but it's exactly who I was describing.
So I had to miss that one, but I did venture out on my Wednesday during in between one of these like meetings that we had, And I went to the Neon Boneyard, which I thoroughly
saw
recommend.
Your pictures and
it's
was
so cool.
Very jealous,
dude. I've wanted to go there since the big casino video from Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, and, sure, yeah.
And I was like, and you know what it is? Without the tour, without the guided tour or whatever, you could do a QR code. I just didn't do it because I was stuck in my head about like, I will just go. I will go and see. And then
I'll have
got
my own experience.
Yeah. It's $25. $25.
Not bad.
You go in, you walk around, you take all these cool pictures. It's great. And if you want to, they have like designated hours for like professional photographers.
I
so
don't
you
know.
Go in and take your wedding photos there and stuff if you get married in Vegas.
Yeah, a friend of mine, I mean, she lived in Vegas for a while. She's back here, but I don't know if she got married there or just got a bunch of pictures taken there, like on the wedding day. But it was definitely part of her wedding day was everybody there. And there were really cool pictures.
They're great. It's such a cool place. It's catching like a little bit of the history. Like as I'm walking around, I'm not following the other tour, but I'm like catching glimpses of it because I keep running into them.
Yeah.
So they had like the original Moulin Rouge casino sign. They have like one of the original Stardust signs. They have a casino I had never heard of, but they had for a brief period of time an Irish themed casino called Flattery's or Flannery's. Oh. So there's a lot of these big gold coins just scattered around the park because I guess that was part of their neon, was just they had like light up coins around the casino.
Interesting.
Yeah. But that was place was cool. I really recommend that. Go check out the Neon Boneyard in Vegas. It's just north of like the Wynn and the Encore. So it's like just past Casino Row and Strip, the Strip and everything. But then afterwards, I fulfilled the prophecy of becoming full Tiki Man and went
This is where I really hit a level of jealousy that I was not
good.
Prepared for.
It was good. I went to a place called the Golden Tiki. Again, by myself. So it's just sad.
Yeah.
But I had two drinks.
I feel like Tiki Bar by yourself is the thing that you never leave.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like, it's just me now.
That's why you sound like this.
That's probably why.
You're just emotionally still in the Tiki Bar and you know your whole psyche stayed behind.
This is post Tiki Blues, my man. they had a lot of cool shit on the wall. I sent you pictures of like famous shrunken heads that they have made for the bar. They had Clem Burke, they had Charles Bukowski, they had Debbie Harry, they had Nick Cage. Like they just had all these shrunken head models. They had a mummified mermaid. They had these little portholes that when you look through, it's like 1800s pinup girls. So it's like all nude, like from the Civil War era photos. So hot, real hot.
Yeah, that's my type.
Yeah. I had two drinks. I had a Mai Tai and a painkiller, just two classic tiki drinks. And I was fucking hammered. Like, holy shit. I think just two drinks. I think they're like $14 and $16. So like,
wow.
You hope that they get you where you're going. And then after the second drink, I had like, can I have a food menu? Because I don't feel comfortable getting in an Uber, let alone driving right now. But it was great. It was like the ceiling lights up into these stars that explode into fireworks. It was like such a cool, immersive bar. I love tiki bars. I love tiki bars so much, Dan.
I am a fan. There's the one, I don't think it's Asbury, but Asbury adjacent, that has like a very 80s motif other than the tiki bar. Where like it's always on, like 80s movies are playing or like kind of 80s cartoons are playing or just you know, static on a TV, which to me feels very 80s still also.
Yeah. Just like the channel
it's a
ended,
whole vibe.
Someone bumped into the receiver, and then they just changed the channel to 3.2 instead of 3.1. So now you're not getting any reception whatsoever.
Now you're just gonna watch this.
Yep. Oh, that's so good. I mean, I love a bar that like, it's like adult Rainforest Cafe, where it's just like it creates this story for you. Like the Golden Tiki is in a strip club, not strip club, a strip mall, probably next to a strip club though. It's a strip. I mean, it's Vegas.
You're never too far.
Never. You would throw a rock. But it's in a strip mall and you're seeing like, you know, like a Korean restaurant, a dollar store, a convenience store. And then all of a sudden, it's just the facade only slightly breaks with like this six or seven tiki shields. And then there's bamboo bow and arrow, like arrows shoved into the wall. Like that someone just ran into the tiki bar to escape a warring tribe. You walk in, and there's this beautiful waterfall, and then you walk into the room. So it's like separates itself. There's two entrances.
Okay.
So it's like this one little vestibule with this like blue, get your eyes adjusted waterfall. And then you walk in, and it's just immaculate. It's immaculate.
I like to think those arrows are from the culture they're appropriating, trying to get their stuff back.
I hope so. And it's a kind of tiki bar,
hey,
too.
Where are you going with that?
Yeah, where they'll play into that. Like, it's such a goofy tiki bar. It's not like, oh, yeah, this is the tiki of, you know, the island of Maui that is, you know, representative of this. Like, there's more wood-carved dicks than anything in that bar than actual, like, tiki memorabilia. So they leaned into like the jokey fun time haha side of it, which I appreciated, because you don't want to feel guilty having a drink.
I mean, that's your Wednesday. I went to a play on Wednesday.
Yes, you did. I want to hear about this play, because we talked about it off mic a little bit.
It was starring past guest and past guest host Mark Maher.
Hey.
He was an actor before he was an important member of society, more important than anything we've ever done. And he was called back to, you know, not my story to tell, the reasons why the person who had the role no longer was able to do it. But Mark was called back last minute by his old director to be like, hey, can you be a guest actor in this show? Because only three dudes auditioned, and I don't want to pick the other two, and the one guy we did pick can't do it. So,
slim pickings, huh?
It was very funny reading through the program for it, because it's a four-person show.
Okay.
And it was like, so-and-so as whatever, class of 2024, and then class of 2027, and class of 2024, and class of 2008. <It's> like, all right, one of these things is not like the other.
One of these things is a tenured professor.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Doll's House Part 2 put on by St. Joe's.
So you explained a little bit to me about Doll's House versus Doll's House Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. But for the audience, please.
My memory of A Doll's House is, I'm sure, skewed, because it was something I had to read in high school. So I'm sure I remember it as taught and not themes that I was able to drum up myself, you know, the way high school literature is, where it's like, this is what you're getting out of this. And it's like, I don't think I am. But it's a very famous feminist work. It's an Ibsen play. And the whole thing is like, you know, women can expect more than, you know, okay. Life can be more than mundane. And like, even if mundane is not bad, they're allowed to expect good and great. Like, they don't have to settle for okay. It's a very kind of easy point now, but in the 1800s, that's huge. That's a lot. That's a really big statement.
Yeah.
And actually, Mark was telling me, he wasn't sure of the country, so I didn't actually look it up to know. But when it came out,
good research for the show. Really good.
When it came out, the end of the play, she just leaves. Like, it closes on her leaving. So she's leaving her husband, she's leaving her kids, her friends, everything. She just leaves. So she walks out the door, door closes, end of play. That's the end of A Doll's House. And apparently that ending was so upsetting that a woman would leave her family just for like the potential of a good, fun, exciting life, that the chancellor or whatever, I think it was whatever, but
names. Come on, name a country.
I think it was German.
Okay.
But in that
they have
region,
a great history, so it's
that German, Austrian, somewhere in that region. That's why chancellor is what is coming to mind. But he made them redo an ending where she comes back in and they just like happily embrace.
I was just kidding.
but this one, A Doll's House Part 2, was
Rock Me Sexy Jesus.
Yeah, it was written in. I wonder how many people get that joke.
Good right show. Into Good the movie. Show. Yeah, yeah, right into the show if you understand what Rock Me Sexy.
How many
Jesus
people
is.
Have seen that? That was one of my early Netflix on DVD through the mail movies.
Oh, okay. This was that was a movie that a friend of the show, Damon Postolakis, loves. Like that is a regular rotation quote movie.
I believe that. That's a that's an accurate.
I feel like, you know, Hamlet 2, Just Visiting with Christina Applegate. You ever see that?
No.
It's I forget the actor's name. Famous French actor. I think he's like Leon the Professional.
Oh, Jean Reno.
Yeah.
Jean Reno.
So he's like a Norman conqueror that gets transported to, I believe, the Valley in 1980s America.
That does sound familiar.
And so they're just visiting and he just doesn't understand the world. And famous quote in the post-Legacy household is he's going to try to chase after a car. And she goes, "You can't chase after a Porsche." He goes, "I have good boots."
I love that. I'm gonna start movie. Using that.
Yeah,
and I don't know that I've seen that movie.
I have good boots. But yeah,
oh, no, like no, that. I can.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this one is an update. It's 15 years later, written in 2017. No, 1800s. It was a contemporary, like, takes place in the present day. And then the 2017 sequel takes place 15 years later. So, you know, we get a little tongue-in-cheek with our historical references. And can you believe they used to treat women like this? We've come so far.
I have such trouble with that, too. Like, I feel like it comes up in the music world a lot where, like, I have to remind myself that when you listen to groundbreaking albums, understand that no one had done it before.
Yeah.
So it's like you listen to Axis Bold as Love and you're like, yeah, it's fucking a record that your dad listens to. Who cares? And you're like, no, this was life-changing for people. They had never heard this before. When you hear fucking like Day Tripper for the first time, that's blowing people's minds.
Got it. Think about, like, you're a Beatles fan and you're just, you know, it's like, please, please me. And you're like, this is nice.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
Day Tripper,
you start getting these like tape loop stuff and you're like, wait a minute. Like, what is time?
I've been duped. One time, a friend of the show, me and Luke Rubers, partook in some drugs. And we laid on the floor and listened to Yellow Submarine. And we all were just like, I never heard the bubbles before.
Wow.
And it was just like, holy shit, we're experiencing this record how we're supposed to. It was
you
crazy.
Know, that is fair.
But continue with the play. And then I want to talk about this this Beatles movie that they're, the Beatles movies that they're making. But
wait, oh, the
yeah.
Sam Mendes one, is that
The Beatles cinematic universe.
God. I'll go and pull up the conversation I was having with Mark when the announcement of these movies came out. It was me, Mark, and also past guest Kevin May. The two of them are way funnier than me. So I just sit back and watch them make joke after joke, and it's a delightful group chat. But yeah, this play, it's, you know, Doll's House is a drama. This one
comedy
is
slapstick comedy,
more towards comedy. And I think it's written to be comedy.
Okay.
And you could tell that like Mark understood that. He understands comedic timing
and context.
And you know, the thing you're saying is absurd, but you have to sell it as if it's not for the joke to work. And like, the varying degrees of that across the cast, but they're children. Like, it's, I don't expect more from them.
That is wild.
Maybe I should. They were literal children.
They really got like a 40-year-old to come back to this fucking child's play, which is great.
Yeah, and he did great. He was legit. He was so good. But like, you know, not on stage enough for my liking. It's such a weird show, because if you don't realize that it's funny, it becomes kind of bad.
Uh-huh.
And like, I could tell that like all the people in the room were there just to see their friends opening night.
Yeah.
So they were just cheering for a play that had happened, but like none of them were like really laughing where they were supposed to. And there were so many spots, and like,
good job, Joe,
afterwards, where it
good
was
job,
like,
Joe.
Mark was the only man. I'll just say that.
Oh, okay. Well, Joe could be a girl's name.
That's true.
Josephine.
But
Jolene.
We're talking with Mark afterwards.
I'm not done naming girls' names.
Joandra. So we're talking with them afterwards. And it had that same quality, like when you're at a comedy show and like when you think something's funny, but nobody else is laughing, that you're like, was that supposed to be funny? Or like, am I laughing at them now?
Yeah.
But like, it kind of felt like that. We're like, they were definitely saying jokes, but like, there wasn't the timing. Like, the timing wasn't right.
Yeah.
So it was really weird. It was hard to figure out. But like, it's a 90-minute play. The one girl playing the lead, the girl who comes back after 15 years to finally get the divorce that she never got when she walked out the first time.
You really got to get that in writing before you leave. I know it's tough. Listen, as a child of divorce, I understand that like sometimes you got to get out of the situation. However, it helps exponentially to get that paperwork in beforehand.
Yeah, it's all complicated and convoluted and, you know, 1800s drama around divorce. But, you know, fun and farcical that if you look at it that way, then it's great. And I had a really good time while I was watching the show. Like, the acting was good. Mark was great. It was really fun to see him in stuff because I don't think I've seen him in things since I've known him. Like, I've seen our mutual friends who I met him through. And he's like, there's a chance because like they did all the same shows that I have seen him, but not since I've known him. Which is, you know, over a decade now.
Yeah.
So like, it's fun to have had the chance to see him, which is really cool, and all that. And then you drive home and you're like, wait a minute, this is the sequel to like a legendary feminist play. And they're just like, no, what if the woman actually had second thoughts about that move she made? Okay. Meg was reading a review in the car on the way home, and the whole thing was like, the guys, I think, I don't know if it was 37 at the time or 37 now, but he's, you know, around my age and grew up in Norway. That's crazy
because you did just shave and get a haircut, so you look 16. Oh, well,
yeah, I'm back down to your age at least. Yeah.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah, if I shaved it all the way, then I would look older, but for now I have a little bit of hair.
You look like an egg. Egg life is a hard life, let me tell you.
I bet. I mean, my head is flat. Life. The only reason I have hair like this is so that it doesn't look flat, but my head is flat.
Oh, you must be so good at balancing books, dude.
Legit, yeah. I don't brag about it that often, but you know,
it's a perk.
Yeah, it's a skill.
It's not a flaw, it's a feature.
But yeah. The guy grew up in Norway and it was inspired to write this because his parents were like actively in love with each other and he was a little creeped out by it.
Okay.
So he wrote a sequel to A Doll's House.
Okay.
I don't necessarily see the through line. I don't know how we get from one to the other there, but
no.
That is,
I mean, as a child of divorce, there are times when in movies, I will root for the divorced dad character without realizing that, like, there's more context. Like, specifically Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, I know we're supposed to like Robin Williams, but like...
Oh, we just watched that. We did a whole, like, Robin Williams kind of watching all the old ones.
Yeah.
And that's rough. That's a rough movie.
Yeah. But
bad. He's a bad person.
Yeah.
And they don't try to pretend that he's not. You just kind of forget that he's not because it's Robin Williams.
Yeah. Same thing with Big Daddy. When you see like John Stewart towards the end of the movie, he's like, finally, I will. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But like, he was busy. Like, I find myself making excuses for the dad portion of it. I do not
know
why.
That one never bothered me as much because I was able to kind of let the writing just be what it is. Where like they needed to write him out, so like he didn't have a choice. You were never gonna see him any better than he is. Like, if he has redeeming qualities, you're never gonna get him.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't want to derail this conversation entirely, but there is something I did this weekend that connects the two things we were just talking about.
You got married.
I saw Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. Tell me everything.
Definitely recommend that movie.
Really?
It okay. is. It's probably like, you know, like a 3.5 out of 5, but it's the type of movie that got made a lot in the 90s.
Okay.
But doesn't really get made a lot now, where like it commits to its dark premise and kind of follows it as far as it can go. It doesn't try to lighten it. It doesn't try to like find a way out that everybody can be okay. It just kind of goes for it. And like it introduces new questions. And it's like, well, the only logical answer to this question would be something going horribly wrong. So something's going to go horribly wrong. But the connection, you have, I don't know, one of the Sprouse, I don't know which one is the Frankenstein.
Let's just say the better one. Who's the
yeah.
ones?
Yeah, they're both doing shit. It's one of them. But it's also directed by Zelda Williams, which when I saw that, nice. I was like, no shit.
Good for her.
I love Diablo Cody knows how to write camp in a way that I didn't give her credit for before, because she wrote so many serious kind of, you know, in your feelings movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, seeing this and Jennifer's Body, you're like, oh, she didn't. Jennifer's Body's not an accident. Like, there may be like a lot of time in between them, but like, she knows how to be in that space. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Also, cool name to have. What a fucking, like,
right?
I don't know if that's their given name.
Let me look that up real quick.
But like, if it is, good parents, cool parents.
We're gonna find out that our parents are like full on the most wealthy people ever. And
oh yeah, we're about to.
Let's see.
Are their names blue? Are their names blue?
It's Brooke Morio. Is her real name? Her birth name is Brooke Busey. I don't know if there's any relation to the Buseys there, but I don't think there is. I'm going to the Wikipedia now.
Say hi to Mr. Pumpkinhead. It's my favorite time of year. Halloween! I fucking love Gary. Crazy Gary Busey.
I was about to say that, you know, I think she has a perfect track record, but then I'm looking at her list here, and Ricky and the Flash is on it.
Oh, okay.
You know, Juno, Jennifer's Body. Okay, uncredited writer on Burlesque. We can let that go. And then, you know, young adult, Tully, this Lisa Frankenstein movie. Real good. She's good.
She's good.
I also played pickleball for the first time this weekend.
You really are just going all in on old people stuff, huh?
Yeah.
You're getting married and doing pickleball?
Yeah. Meg and I played two of her coworkers.
She won.
Meg and I lost, and then I won paired up with both of her coworkers.
Nice. So it was her.
Meg lost every time. Yeah, it was one of those.
She was not carrying the team the way she needed to.
Like, you know those situations where you have to pretend to not be competitive? Where like, when I'm good enough at something, I just want to win it. Like, if I'm not good, then I'm fine. Like if I'm just okay at something, I'm totally fine with just having fun. I can turn it off for that. But you know, I started playing and I started figuring it out, and I was like, all right, I get this. I'm good. Let's go. And it was very hard to just be like, oh no, that wasn't. I didn't do that shot on purpose. That was what a crazy accident. Oh man, backspin went. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize you could do backspin. What are they? Oh my gosh.
You're a prick.
I know. And that's why I have to pretend like I'm not being a prick on purpose.
I realized very early on that I'm not a sports person, because specifically when we were playing volleyball in gym, all of a sudden something took over me where I was the most competitive fucking person on that side of the net. It's not who I want to be at all. And I realized
I don't love being it either, but it's so fun.
No, I don't like it.
It
I don't
is
like
so
it
much
I feel like
fun.
I'm being mean to everyone around me for someone that has very little skill to do it. Like, it's just a game. And it's for specifically like a half a credit in high school.
Yeah, it's hard to get into gym class. Gym class, I used to like I would do just enough to be like, yes, I'm showing you I know how to do this, but I'm not going to do more than this.
Come on. Yeah. I will
we all say, know where we are.
I think it came out of a thing where it's like, I was raised with a lot of structure and being sheltered. So it was like, sports have rules. And if you follow the rules and do your best, you will succeed. And if other people aren't following those rules, then what I was doing is not enough. And I have to force these other people to carry out what they need. And I realized, like, oh, it's just a lot of all internalized, like, this is about me.
Yeah.
I
don't mind that stuff though. I think as I've gotten older and kind of more in tune with how I think, it's just like, oh, I see this happening, and like I have the ability to make the choice of like, do I want this to happen or not want this to happen, and I can kind of control it to a point. And like, it's after I say yes, I want this to happen, that I'm like, well, here goes, all bets are off.
Yeah.
But up to that point, I can still kind of make the choice either direction.
For sure. Excuse me. Why don't, on that note, we see what we're talking about, because we don't even know.
So yeah, we should say we do potentially have a guest coming in.
Okay, cool.
We're recording on Sunday night, so
yeah.
You know, we're up against it, so rescheduling is difficult with all the busyness we had this week. But they're having some you know, putting the kids to bed issues, and you know, totally fine, no worries at all.
Yeah.
But we couldn't wait to start because it's Sunday night and this has to go out tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So and, you know, the door's open. If they make it in time, they make it in time. We shall see. So if another voice pops up, that's what happened. But for now, let's see what we're talking about. We got petulant.
Petulant. All right. We'll be right back with petulant. I think it's from Mortal Kombat. It's
from
very,
a thing.
It's very much in the same thing as what's the villain's name in Mortal Kombat? Liu Kang versus
Shao Kahn.
I was gonna say Shere Khan. Yeah, I think he's the big bad. Shao Kahn.
Shere Khan is Jungle Book.
Shere Khan is Jungle Book. Shao Kahn, I believe, is Mortal Kombat.
Your soul is mine.
That guy.
Is mine.
Yeah. That guy. Horrifying.
Who says Mortal Kombat?
Shiba?
Does he say Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat has such deep lore. I don't know anymore.
Dude, we did it on Rank Bank way back when, and it was like, how do I decide? And I was like, I've only played two games, so I'm limiting my choice to players that I might have played. But yeah. I started going through, and it was like, you know, you get the blue links on Wikipedia to be like, so-and-so's brother. And I'm like, who the fuck is so-and-so? And you go through and like, well, this is the robot version of this guy, and this guy is the brother of this guy. So it's sort of like he's the robot brother of that
There's
guy,
also
actually.
Like dark versions of them too, where they're like underworld versions of
there's
Liu
like
Kang.
Zombie versions and shit, right?
Oh god, so much. And it's just a game about ripping spines out of people's necks.
Yeah, they didn't have to do any of that. They I mean, look at not. Street Fighter. They set up a whole lot of potential for story and did nothing. They had no story.
I'm a red guy, that's a blue guy, fight.
This guy's from here, cool. This guy's from here, cool.
Yeah. Also, one's named Ryu, one's name is Ken.
Yeah, they're brothers.
They're brothers.
Unknown relation, but brothers.
Hi, Duke. All right, petulant. Petulant. Speaking of petulant children,
we're definitely back on Mortal Kombat talk.
Yeah, 100%. Right on. I am too sick to do a dictionary man, but for anyone knowing, petulant, insolent or rude in speech or behavior, characterized by temporary or capricious ill humor or peevish. Not to
that actually changes how I was thinking about it.
Oh yeah, how are you thinking about it originally?
I was thinking about it more as that, like, kind of childish anger.
Sure.
Where, like, it's that thing that, like, the legit response could be, like, dude, shut up. You're an adult.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, you still feel it. You're still allowed to be mad about it.
Not to be topical at all or with current events, but, you know, if you want to know anything about petulance, just open up any comment section about this week's SNL.
Oh my gosh. The number of
we don't
pictures...
have to talk about it, but
I mean, we can do it a little bit because I am sure a number of our listeners are feeling some sort of petulant way about it. They're like, there's I mean, the jealousy that comes with it, all that stuff, and I get it.
Yeah.
And like all the people who are sharing pictures of like, look at this flyer on this show that I did with him. And like, okay.
He doesn't remember you.
Yeah.
I've decided
that. The joke I kept saying was like, if you found out about it the same time some random person in the middle of the country found out about it, you're not friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I have decided that I have not involved enough in that world to care anymore.
Yeah.
Like I can't waste the bandwidth. It's there are cool things about it, there are sad things about it. Either way, I don't know them.
Yeah. If I were to engage, I would lose my ability to float around the scene however I choose. Yeah. So you know what? We're just gonna let that baby float on. And I'll float in whichever direction I feel like.
Yeah.
It's nice to have options. I don't need to box myself in because there's people I don't like on every side of this argument.
So true. It doesn't matter who. It's just like there's a couple people on both sides. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, I don't have to go that hard.
Yeah. And there's also sides on both sides. You're like, I agree.
Yeah.
You are right.
Yeah, fair points made across the board.
Yep.
Usually irrelevant to what's actually happening.
It's, yep.
You know, using the platform created by other people's success to, you know, voice a thing that you're concerned about, I guess, you know, take advantage of it. Why not? How many chances do you get to do that? But, you know, unrelated.
That's petulant for sure. I feel like there's a lot of petulance going on. I knew as soon as the episode aired, there was going to be a fucking bomb going off in Philly comedy.
And I'm
loving it from afar.
It is such a fun thing.
I can't
watch.
Wait to move, like, in a week and be in Philly and go, what happened? What I miss?
You'll be back in this. It is so much fun to watch. Like, it's perfectly split on the line. Like, nobody was convinced. So, like, it's not like anybody was like, you know, I saw that and I don't think he's the greatest anymore.
Yeah.
And nobody's like, I saw that and I think he's okay.
Yeah.
Like, nobody. Everyone just drew their lines before and they're all pretending like they gave it an honest shot. Like, no, you didn't. Like,
I will say, I don't know if we'll ever hear about it again, but someone that did not exhibit petulance in that entire episode, because we watched it, because of course we did.
I haven't watched it yet. I didn't have the chance yet today.
There is a part of the episode, it's during the goodbyes, where Bowen just walks over to Shane and shakes his hand and gives him a big hug, and you can see him go like, you did a good job, and he walks away, and that was enough for me because I wanted his monologue to be Bowen standing behind him the entire time for his monologue.
Is Bowen the only other one who's still there
I think Chloe Fineman was also that year.
I couldn't remember. I know there was three, but I couldn't
remember.
But
I think a little unfairly lumped those two together of like, Darcy, but you can't do that because he's there, and he can't say that because they're there. But it's,
oh, for sure.
But it's like, I don't think either of them. Like, I think they had their own conversations, and both of them had their own opinions, and that they were content with that. Everyone else took it and ran.
Yeah. Well, that's the fun part about all this is that nobody involved seems to actually be involved.
Yeah. Oh, well, we could do this on name names, but there was one part that you will see during the monologue. Actually, you know what? We're just going to fucking tap out real quick. All right. We're back.
Wow.
We can't talk about it, can we?
No. No, it'll be way too clear who we're talking about. You know, honestly, I think it might already be clear who we're talking about.
Don't worry about it. Nope. Don't worry. Listen,
a person I consider a friend, despite all the reasons not to. It's just, you know, one of those too much history people. But, yeah. You know,
I think we did a great job a couple weeks ago where we played name names after the show, and we were talking about the same person. And it was nice that. Well, we kept it vague, but we do. That was good.
Some people, some people know their brand.
So, let's talk petulant. Dan, what makes you feel petulant?
Oh,
old school episode.
God.
I feel like I haven't asked you that in forever.
Yeah, this is real throwback. I mean, no lightning round, no none of that. You know,
oh.
The only difference, I guess, we didn't start on it. But
sure.
Yeah, petulance. I feel like of all the negative emotions that I usually skirt around, petulance is one that I like lean into. But like,
it's fun.
I find it very funny to be petulant.
One of my groomsmen made a joke at the bachelor party. One of, there's so many. I did a show with Alex Yang, and he tried to roast me by using photos from our wedding photo album. And I destroyed that.
Shout out to Alex Yang. I've been posting, the first person to respond to this gets a drawing. Anybody else can buy it for $3. He's the first and only person to buy one for $3.
Hell yeah. I don't have the money. I'm moving.
And you know, honestly, his was better than the ones I did for free. I'll just say. I spent a little more time on it. So listeners, follow me on Instagram. You'll get a drawing of your face. $3. The link is there pretty much every day.
Use it for your LinkedIn.
Two or three times a week. You know, just saying. The drawings are getting better.
Very good. Love that you've been drawing lately. But I think petulance, my buddy, one of my groomsmen, we were just chit-chatting about something. I forget the subject. And he, as like a roast, went, yeah, because he's like, yeah, because George has such nuanced opinions and understands where people come from. And I was like, oh, yeah, I am pretty fucking petulant when I'm like, no, fucking brown sugar Pop-Tarts are the best Pop-Tarts. You can go fuck yourself.
those are the arguments I'm talking about.
Yeah,
like,
that's a fun petulant argument.
it's just kind of faux anger. That like you can really lean into sarcasm with petulance, and like it's somewhat like disarming that you can still be the asshole,
yeah,
but you can be disarming at the same time if you use petulance right.
Did it make it to the episode where we were talking about Gatorade? Because we had like a stern talking about Gatorade at the top of the show, but I don't remember if we were.
I think that's the beginning of the episode.
Okay,
it may
so
have
yeah.
just missed the cut, but yes.
So
I like
a, we just
I
had
like
a petulant
blue,
argument.
You like whatever
piss yellow. I like dehydrated neon piss yellow flavor because it's the best flavor, and I'll fight you in the street about it.
You have to drink that until that's not the color of your piss. That's
exactly
that's the goal every time. You have to drink Gatorade
that's
for a hangover.
That's how I know.
I guess it had to have made it because. If we made it this far without telling the listeners that you're very hungover,
I'm
we wouldn't
hungover.
Have done our job.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm out of the hangover now. I'm just sick.
Yeah, fair.
But yeah, petulance is fun. Of a negative emotion, it's fun.
Yeah. And like, I guess it's off-putting when people are like that's how you would describe them, that like they are petulant, not their being petulant. But like if somebody is that type of person who is like always complaining about the most minor details about things, that sucks.
Yeah.
But if you can tell somebody's at their wit's end and they pick like the silliest thing to complain about just to, you know, run those emotions out a little bit, like that's fun. That's a good person.
That's
like, you know what? I don't need to process the big with you, so let's all do the small together. Like,
yeah.
That's a fun person.
I mean, what's your most petulant take? What do you think? Like something that you just like vehemently are like, nope, this is it, and it's stupid, but I'm right.
It would have to probably be TV related.
Yeah, for
that
sure.
Like I feel like there's, you know, your Game of Thrones type shows where like the hype machine takes over before I have a chance to watch it, where I'm just like, I'm gonna fucking watch your show, like whatever. Yeah. Like yeah. There's nothing you can do to make me watch your terrible show. I don't know if it's terrible. I'm just gonna call it terrible. I'm gonna start complaining about it and be mad at it for existing.
I have that with Idols right now, the band Idols. I've gone back and forth with, I should give them a shot. And then everyone's like, they're the greatest thing ever. And then another person would be like, no, they're not. They're awful. They're not real punk. And they're just like, okay, I don't want to get involved. It's kind of similar with SNL. I don't want to be involved.
It's a very weird thing, I think, for me with TV in general, might be my most petulant thing of like, no, I'm not watching your dumb fucking show.
Yeah.
Like it's something about like being recommended a show makes me so mad.
Sure.
They're like, I watch movies. And like, I'm not saying that makes me better.
I don't know why that's so funny to me. Like, I watch movies.
Yeah. I'm not saying that makes me a better person. I'm saying that, you know, I grew up in a time where things moved a little slower and I was raised to appreciate that.
That's crazy because so, you look like a high school freshman right now.
Yeah. I feel like nobody who is just... I went back to this. Nobody who's just getting to this will ever think this. But like, I don't have time for TV shows. And anybody who has time for TV shows, I'm like, you are not doing something else. Yeah. Like, there's something else in your life that you are specifically avoiding because you want to watch a show.
It's like, calling my dad.
It probably is for a lot of people.
I was considering the other day. Oh, actually, this might be a funny joke. I read this down. I was considering rewatching all of Friends, and then I decided to just call my dad.
Yeah, I think you should definitely do that. Because I think I don't think that's a foreign concept for a lot of people. Because like it's like, you know, TV is the opiate of the masses, blah blah blah, whatever. I don't intellectually feel that, but when it comes up, I'm like, you're all sheep. You're falling for it. They all got you in the trap. All these different networks and platforms are all putting out new shows just so that you can buy new things from them. I watch movies.
And you didn't once buy that popcorn bucket, did you?
Honestly, I don't even do that anymore. I'll buy like a
not even the one that looks like a
store
worm
snack,
worm
and I'll
buckle.
Bring it with me. Yeah. Oh man, I would have got that. I for sure would have bought that.
Oh god, I like that it cleans your fingers, but I don't like reaching in to grab the popcorn. I don't even like popcorn, but I do want one. Friend of the show, Blake Correa, he has one. He's a big dude guy, so he went
Does
out.
Does he really have it?
And he got the bucket.
Wow. Are they going to put it out again for the new one?
I hope so.
Oh, I have a goal now. I had no intentions of seeing that movie in theaters, but if it's part of that.
Yeah, you get that bucket.
I'll go see that.
I'll go see the bucket.
I do get petulant when people are like dismissive of things I like.
Sure.
Like if they don't like it, that's fine. Like I don't mind if I have a different opinion of things than people. Like, I like the conversation that comes from that. But when people are like, you like that? And that's it. Like, it's only judgment. I get real petulant. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. So yeah, you think that you're somehow better than me because you've made your opinion before you experienced the thing? Okay, whatever.
Yeah, this is exactly like the argument I had with my best man. It's a good roast where he's just like, yeah, no, George has nuance. George doesn't just isolate people and alienate people because of his shitty opinions about mundane shit. And to Nick Helmstetter, I say, you're right. As a good cop.
That's good. You feel seen in those moments.
Yeah. Thank you. I think I thanked him. I was like, thank you.
God, I'm a little bit jealous of that because so often when I've been roasted, it's forgivable in like the roast battle tournament kind of stuff because like you have to just kind of on the fly write stuff for the people that you're coming up against next. But like every time I go up against somebody, there's just like, look at this dude. He's like single and white. I'm like, no, I'm not.
I'm engaged and white.
I'm not the guy you're describing. Like, I have trouble talking to women. I am not awkward around people socially. Like, I'm not that guy. Like, you don't know me. You're not talking about me.
I got roasted so hard at Wheel a couple weeks ago. We landed on Wheel. Liam Paris decided to roast everyone in the room.
Hell yeah.
So he ran around. They ran around? He ran around?
I don't know. Liam ran around.
Liam ran around and just went off on everybody, doing like good jabs at people.
Like and crowd and all?
Yeah, like he went around. There was a wireless microphone. He walked around.
Beautiful.
It was at Brew House. So he was like, they're going into the thing. They get to me and they go, George, you listen to like pop punk or something. I don't know. I don't remember any of your jokes. And then he walked away. And I was like, that was good. And then afterwards, I went up to Deary and Gordon. I was like, that really actually cut me pretty fucking deep. I wasn't expecting to be hurt that much by that.
Yeah. By a non-joke.
Just by like, I don't remember you. You've been out of the scene for a while. Good to see you. Bye. I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no. I am forgettable. Oh, yeah.
I am not timeless. I have no legacy. You're right. Like, I got heady with it.
Got to start doing the bee rabbit to start roasting yourself.
Boom, yeah, I am forgettable. What of it?
Oh,
I'm one in a million, and they all happen to be in this scene. Don't fucking ruin my joke.
I wasn't going to tip your joke.
It's a good joke.
Yeah.
Although you're the only person that supported it. Everyone else has been like, it needs work.
Oh yeah, it definitely needs work, but it's the basis of a solid idea for sure.
Yeah,
there's room to play there on both sides.
Math. The math sandbox is big in comedy.
Well, I feel like people, get petulant on that. Every time somebody's like, "Oh, I hate math," it's like, no, you don't. You don't hate math. Like,
yeah,
you were taught by the wrong people who are also afraid that they might get a math problem wrong. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal to get a math problem wrong. You do it. And then you're like, that's not right. And then you figure out why it's wrong. And then you know how to do it after that. Like, it's just puzzles. And I get that everybody doesn't have puzzle brain.
I don't have puzzle brain. I don't like math.
Come on.
But I think you are right. We're like, I don't like math because of how it was taught to me. And because at some point being raised by television on some TV show. Like,
well, it's like broccoli. Math is broccoli.
Yeah, you were told broccoli's gross. Broccoli's fine. It smells a little bit, but it's fine.
Yeah, your farts are so gross after broccoli. Yeah. But like, it's also pretty funny. Eat your broccoli. Fart real funny.
Math, same thing. Fucking do your math.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Do your math. Your farts will be better.
Oh, man. Well, I know that we asked what the people said. What did the people say? I think we've done enough talking to each other about petulance. So
yeah,
let's
I'm
see
feel
what,
petulant about this.
Let's see what these
moving on
said.
Already. All right. All right. So this one went up in a couple different places, which is only funny to me because I got full long responses on Instagram because they limit the character responses. So I have one on there that's broken up into three separate messages that I got. But I'll start on Facebook. What makes you feel petulant? Terrible drivers.
Okay. That's interesting. I think that's just annoying.
I mean, it is that type of thing where most of the time when I'm mad at somebody for doing something on the road, they're not doing something that egregious.
Yeah.
Like my ability to like find the middle when I'm driving is like impossible. I just can't do it.
Uh-huh.
It's either like everything is okay or that person fucking sucks.
I was just rewatching an old Mark Maron special and there was a whole conversation about traffic where he's like, you just want justice in the world. Where like you want at the end of traffic to be see some guy upset on the side of the road that looks distraught, so you could go fuck that guy. guy. He's having a hard day.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I want it.
And then that's definitely petulant to just like, you know, passively wish for the misery of other people.
That's what my mom does. She was like, my mother, great woman, has been like, I never wish ill on anyone. I never wish death on anyone, but I wish them severe inconvenience. She has been in traffic and be like, oh, I hope someone rear ends you and your fucking rates go up.
Insurance burn. I love it. Now, this next one, I don't know if the layers are intended or not, but it's got them. People refusing to do something I want for no other reason than the fact that I'm the one who wants it.
Ooh. Yeah, that's annoying.
Because, I mean, they feel petulant, I guess, about someone else
who's being petulant.
It's the difference between feeling it and acting on it, I guess.
You know what I think petulant is? You know how like we sometimes change up the word where instead of scary, it's scary?
Yeah.
Petulant is just no.
Yeah.
That's the whole emotion. It's just no.
Yeah, like that's why I felt like the definition you read, I was like, I guess. But like the part of petulance for me is that like the anger and the response match what they would be for things that matter.
Yeah.
But the thing you're responding to doesn't matter. And like everybody knows. You know, the person you're mad at knows.
Yeah.
But you're still hitting that level like, you know, they burned down your house. Like it's not that serious. It's all right. This first one on the Instagram side, I guess I should say, comes from Meg.
Hey Meg.
She said me.
It's good.
It's a very I've had to deal with mostly in my D&D game, but the Simpsons Smokey the Bear, like who can prevent forest fires? You said you, referring to me. No, only you can prevent. I can't shake it. It's been coming up at work. It's like, guys, come on. This should not be real life. We all understand pronouns and what they mean and who you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? God, we keep hitting on little petulant triggers for me. It's like, just say what you mean. Say what
it's
you mean.
It's a fun episode so far.
Yeah, like I know none of this is serious, and I know that like you don't even have to take the thing you're talking about seriously, but just say what you mean. It's fine. Yeah. Like just say it. It's a dumb thing to say it. Just say it. Get it out of the way. Just say the thing. But whatever. Airports.
They're just annoying. I've been in a couple in the past few weeks, so I surrender to them. I understand. When people are behind me, like I think people in airports that don't understand the contract that you just entered into by going to the airport, they're petulant. Fucking, you bought the ticket, you knew it was gonna happen. Like things get delayed, gates move, security's long.
It's the same thing as traffic though, where like you're mad at traffic without acknowledging that you are traffic.
Yeah.
Is that like the thing you're mad at, you're also contributing to for the person behind you. So like, you know, pump the brakes on the anger, dude. You're fine. Like,
you're fine. Everyone's in the same boat.
You are existing within the system. And yes, the system sucks, but this is where we all are.
But
you're not the only one experiencing this.
And you were told about the system. You knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
We've gone through this for millennia. Like, this shit happens. Understand that existence and experience happen. Fucking, you got to go with it, man.
Yeah, no one's happy about taking their shoes off, but like, just take your damn shoes off.
I have pre-check. I don't have to take my shoes off.
Sure.
I don't have to take my laptop out. I don't have to take off my belt. Although I wear sweatpants to the plane now, so who the fuck is wearing belts?
I mean, we're 20 years on from 9/11 and the whole thing changing, and like, still
upset about this.
When people who are older than me, who were actually able to process all that shit while it was happening with a fully formed brain.
Yeah.
Walk into an airport and they're like, really? My shoes? It's like, yeah, we all know it doesn't do anything. We all know it doesn't make a difference. You just do it. The rules are the rules. Just because they suck doesn't mean we have to be mad at them.
Yeah.
Just do the thing. Go eat your Sparrow in the walkway, whatever. Yeah. Like,
fuck it. I had a Cinnabon in Vegas.
Worth is that better than other Cinnabon?
I mean, I no one gets Cinnabons unless they're at an airport. I've never
that's
once.
Why, that's why I said Sparrow. I'm like, they're not in my mall anymore. It's only in the airport.
Like that'll change anybody's mood. If you get a Cinnabon after just a trip through even TSA pre-check. In fact, the pre-check line was longer than the normal security line. And I still stayed in it because I signed up for it, man. I buy into this. I'm going to do it. Fuck it. Who cares?
Yeah. I want to say it was Nashville. It might have been Jacksonville because those are the two legs of the one flight home I had. But I had Sparrow breakfast.
Ooh,
it was breakfast pizza. It was you know, it had the Sparrow same effect that anything pizza. Else from Sparrow, but you know, tasted good.
Tasted on the going in.
Yeah, everything from the airport tastes good. It's just the thing you probably shouldn't eat before you get on an airplane.
Exactly. It's disrespectful to your fellow flyers.
Yeah. So the last one we have here, we already kind of touched on it a little bit, but this despite spanning three messages is a little bit more succinct than we were talking about. Doing stand-up bi-weekly, I'll find myself having the "it's not fair" argument in my head with my hands clenched like an angry child. Then I get a little snack to feel better because I'm an adult.
Yep. I was taught early on by friends of the show and show runners coming into Philly that like, this shit doesn't owe you anything. You don't.
Yeah.
I get the emotion. I get that, like, I should be up there. I'm doing better. I could do better than them. But you're not. You're not up there.
The weird thing that clicked for me is that, like, when I don't want to say a bad person because it sounds like I'm talking about who we've been talking about because I don't necessarily, you know, think that. But, like, when a bad person succeeds, everyone's like, oh, this whole thing is fake. You can be terrible and you can still make it, but like, good people make it too. Like, the weird thing about comedy is that comedy is the only thing that matters.
Yeah,
that if they're funny, that's all that matters, and you want other things to matter in the course of success because you don't want bad people to succeed.
Yeah,
but if they're funny, they're going to, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yep.
And that's a helpless, weird feeling. But it's also encouraging that if you're funny, you know, there's a shot out there for you. Like, you don't all have you to need. Be terrible. You can just all be you and funny.
That is something that, like, I've talked about with people a lot recently, where it's just like, I don't want to join a bandwagon or research what works. I just want to do stand up. The way I enjoy doing stand-up. And when I see other people being genuine, I like their stand-up more. Like, I like when people are like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do crowd work because why the fuck? So I get hits on TikTok so I can build up a following and then get famous? No, man, you'll build up a following and get famous if you're funny and you do it your way because you'll find the audience.
Yeah, like the conversation I've had to have, I mean, generally people who are like a little bit younger than me, but, you know, not as much as you would think for them to not kind of see the full picture and the way things kind of ebb and flow. But like we've had countless different apps that were, this is the one that bookers are looking at since I've been doing comedy. And, you know, every now and then you get like, you know, Twitter brought about a bunch of people who are, you know, maybe like, you can name three or four of them who are still famous, like who can still, you know, tour and sell out places. They're like, you get this flash in the pan, like, oh, look at the success this person's having. We want to put them on stage. But if you're not able to do it, you won't be able to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So it's more important to be funny in real life than it is to be funny on the internet.
Yeah.
They're like, you might get the shot because you're funny on the internet, but if you're not funny in real life, that's the only shot you're going to get because you raise the level of kind of expectation by having so many followers. And if you're not going to meet it, it's not going to keep happening for you. Like there's no net to catch you when you're that high up.
Yeah.
Like if you go up the ladder and work your way up and get better, progress through time, like, you know, all the people, I think the, you know, 10 years for overnight success people. If you do it that way, you know, you're going to have lasting success. If you try to do it quick, you're not going to.
And sometimes you do, but it's because you're insanely lucky and talented.
Yeah, sometimes like you're Nick Swartz and you do one competition, you win the first time you try, and then you get a decades-long career out of it. He's the person I can name. Like, yep. He's the one person I can name who that's happened for.
And, I mean, if we're being honest, I don't think he's ever coming on the show, but diminishing returns each time.
Maybe.
I'm not a huge Nick Swartzen fan. I was thinking, I mean, I won't name names, but I didn't know this person. But they've become highly successful, and from what I understand, they were in the scene for like a year. They just knew what to do, and then all of a sudden, their career took off immediately. So good for them. They got lucky, yeah. And they're very talented.
You know, like if you
Emmy
if you
Award
can back
winning
it up,
person.
You'll be fine. Yes, I know you're
talking
about it.
Writing speeches for the president, talented.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah, some
wild.
People have the ability, but it's, you know, the work and the effort were put in not on the internet. It was not made online. It was made in person by meeting real people and having real interactions with real audiences who then go tell other people.
Yep.
And that's the internet is important. Futile. The internet is throwaway.
It is. It's disposable. I just watched it was Kyle Kinane promoting his new special, saying like we live in a time of disposable comedy. It's just
yo, are you
lights.
Here next weekend? We should go see him.
Am I? I'll take a look. I want to go.
We're promoting Kyle Kinane at Helium now.
Yep. Come on the show.
Dude, that would rule. I would end the show.
I was like, we did it. We got him.
We peaked. We finished.
No, Peaks was a different show, dude. Stop confusing
right.
The shows on the
peak.
Show.
Peaks peaked.
all right. Well, I think that's our show, guys. I'm going to go blow my nose and take a nap because I got to wake up anyway.
Godspeed. Back to work.
Thanks, everybody. This has been a really fun show. Dan, I will see you some point this week. And there will be less stuff behind me as ever before.
Just dwindling.
It's slowly going away.
It'll right, be just bye. Those shoes. Bye.
Feel Feelings is a Wasted Robot production. Editing done by Dan Getz. Music by George Bruderman. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Feel Feelings Pod, and even leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/feelfeelings. If you're ever feeling any heavy emotions and feel like there's nowhere to turn to, please don't hesitate to reach out to us or to any of the resources in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation from the Wasted Robot Network. For more information and links to other shows, please visit www.wastedrobotrecords.com/podcasts.
Lord, such a professional show!